Does the heart have emotion? In a moment, Howard Martin joins us, the Heart Math Solution, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Howard Martin, our special guest, brings more than 30 years of experience in business and personal development to the position of Executive Vice President of Heart Math. Howard has been instrumental in assisting Doc Childre, he's the founder, in the development of teaching of Heart Math's programs since its inception. He speaks around the planet on the Heart Math approach to advancing human performance that is based on compelling scientific research and evidence linking heart function with health, emotion, well-being, and intelligence. Howard Martin, back on Coast to Coast. Howard, I love this subject. Welcome back.
Hey, George. It's really good to be with you again, my friend. Yeah, it's been a lot happening to us and to the world since we were last together. It was back in Valentine's Day, actually 2020, so it's really an honor and a privilege to have an opportunity to chat with you again.
How cool was it on Valentine's Day to talk about the heart?
It was pretty cool. We got some interesting comments and questions and call-ins from people. I hope that the message landed well about heart not being sentimental or weak or soft, but an intelligence that we need to navigate changing times. And, of course, a couple of weeks after we did that show, times changed. So I hope
they did.
Planted with people, you know, that they gained something from it that they were able to take forward into this last year and a half.
People are under incredible stress these days, Howard. Incredible stress. It's got to have an effect on the heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's affecting a lot of things, George. Heart health has often been linked to stress. You know, knowing that high stress situations create cardiovascular disease. It's a tough time for people. People have been going through lots emotionally. We've had a lot of events taking place in the world in addition to the pandemic that have caused a lot of separation, biases, judgments, a lot of stress. And that is taking a toll on people's health, and I think that we haven't seen that toll yet, really. That's going to play out over time into the future. As we as we end some of this turmoil we're in right now, it'll still be a lot to deal with as we go forward, and health is one of those areas.
We're going to talk about the heart tonight, and for people who think, oh, my God, are they going to talk about hardening of the arteries and this thing? No. We're not doing that. We're doing something very special. The heart is almost like a brain to itself, isn't it, Howard?
Yeah, what's interesting, George, is our research here at HeartMath all these years, we've done research for now almost 30 years on understanding heart physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And what we found early on is that the physical heart was doing more than pumping blood. It was actually an information processing center in our bodies. It was sending information to the brain and throughout the entire system, important information that's critically important to things like how our brains actually operate. Within the heart itself, we discovered, not just us, but it was in the literature, but we were able to bring it to the forefront of people knowing about it, is that we have a nervous system, very complex nervous system. It's studied through a medical discipline called neurocardiology. And this nervous system next to the brain is the most complex part of the nervous system we have, and it resides in the physical heart. And that nervous system is sending signals to the brain. Brain function is critically dependent upon this information. And it's like the heart and the brain are talking all the time in this neurological language that they have between each other. And that was just one of many discoveries showing that the physical heart was a very intelligent part of our physiology, to say the least.
Fantastic. Now tell us about heart math. Exactly what is that?
It's a system, George, consisting of tools and techniques and technology that we've developed, all based on understanding the intelligence of the heart and designed to help empower people through changing times. And we have a pretty large footprint in the world today, I must say, because we've been able to implement heart math training programs and technology in such a variety of societal sectors. Everything from very conservative organizations like all four branches of the U.S. military, universities, school systems, many, many hospitals and healthcare settings, as well as for hundreds of thousands, I guess, and maybe even more, maybe millions by now, of people around the world who are just interested in their own personal growth and well-being. So it's tools and techniques and technology all put together in a really convenient system, and it's based upon one heart and upon the intelligence of the heart.
What did Doc Childre see 30-plus years ago that made him realize there's something very different and special about the heart? It's not just a pumping muscle?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, really, because my relationship, my friendship, and more goes back with Doc now almost 50 years.
Wow.
Long before there was a heart math, we were just young men living in North Carolina and interested in personal growth. How do we become better people? How do we expand our awareness and our consciousness? How do we make sense of life? And Doc was always the kind of guy who seemed to be one step ahead of everybody else on that stuff. And he used to talk to me when I was a very young man about heart. And he said, look, you know, if you look at all of the spiritual literature and all the things that have been said throughout history, heart has always been talked about in the most revered ways. And heart is always in this literature that you read about. So we should probably take a deeper look at that and see if there's something to it or not. You know, being young and full of vim and vigor, I mean, I wasn't the kind of guy that necessarily wanted to jump in and start looking at heart, you know. But it was Doc's promptings that said, let's take a look at this. And it unfolded over time. But one of the things that, George, I do remember about him a long time ago is he's a very caring man, and he cared a lot about people and about humanity.
And he's still alive. He's 76, right?
You're exactly right. He's 76, turned 76, the 8th of September. Definitely alive, definitely well. He's a chairman of HeartMath. He gives the guidance and direction to all that we do. He doesn't get as involved in, like, day-to-day business and things like that, but he is, you know, he's the heart of HeartMath. He gives the guidance and direction for everything that we do. But he could see that the change is coming. He talked to me a long time ago about the world and the stress and the shift in consciousness that was going to go down and how that was going to create great opportunity for humanity and for growth. But it was also going to create a lot of chaos and confusion and turmoil. He could see that stuff. And so when we began to put together HeartMath back in 1991, it was based upon, we got to do something. We need to put a system together that will be easy for people to use. It's not based on a lot of complex stuff. It's not based on having to be spiritual. It's based on something we already have inside ourselves, which is the magnificent, beautiful intelligence of the heart. And we need to put together a system that can be shared with people to help them as we went through these changes. That's what started it all, was a caring intention that Doc had, and then people like me that were part of that, and we put together this system. And I could never have imagined, George, that it would become all this. I had no way of seeing what was going to take place.
Did you ever think you'd be on a national radio show talking about the heart?
Listen, no. You know, writing best-selling books and all that stuff and traveling around the world.
Not at all.
No way. You know, and I do still appreciate that. And I was thinking about that tonight, actually thinking about how many people would like to be on your show, right?
Lots.
Lots of people would love to be on your show. And you have me on regularly. You've had me on, you know, three, four, five times now.
Yep.
And that's an honor, and I think, you know, I was appreciating that rather than saying, oh, yeah, now I'm going to do George's show. I'm going to stay up late and do Coast to Coast. No, it was more like, look at what an opportunity I have here to do this again. And so, you know, I appreciate you for that, and I'm just letting the listeners know that I'm still passionate about what I do, and an opportunity to be on a platform like yours is nothing that I take lightly. It's a heart-based level of appreciation I have for it.
Howard, when somebody meets someone and you like them, whether you're emotional for them or you fall in love with them, is it the brain or is there something in the heart that makes that feeling happen?
There's definitely something in the heart. Let me explain. We talked a little bit about the heart, you know, communicating with the brain just a little while ago, but the heart also produces a magnetic field. It's a magnetic energy that surrounds us in 360 degrees and can be detected about 3 feet, or for those of you in Europe or somewhere, 1 meter outside of the body. So this field surrounding us, and what's making up that field is our emotions.
Is it like an aura?
It's not an aura. It's like it's not subtle energy. It's very measurable magnetic field energy, very conservative. A great analogy is a cell phone. A cell phone produces a magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
That magnetic field gets imprinted with information. It can be the phone call, the text, the picture, whatever you put in that field. Then that field transmits that information to another phone, which picks it up through a magnetic field. Well, we're doing the same thing with our emotions. We're imprinting the heart's magnetic field with our emotions. And we pick up on that stuff, unconsciously usually. But that's why we seem to resonate more with certain people than we do others. We see somebody, and for some reason they're likable. There are other reasons. It might be how they look, might be their body language, might be because we know something about what they do professionally. But there's also something unseen going on. There's an unseen energetic communication taking place between all living systems and especially between people. And it comes because we produce this field. It's produced by the actual physical heart. Now, an aura would be something that would be, I would consider, subtle energy. But when researchers look at the heart's field today, what they have told me is that, look, this is a very conservative measurement. We believe this field is a lot stronger and goes a lot further than 3 feet, that it is quantum in a way, that it does communicate beyond the boundaries of time and of space and all that stuff, right? And so the field is something that we study a lot here at HeartMath, the energetic connectivity that's going on in relation to all kinds of fields, but especially the heart's field.
Do other hearts communicate with other hearts?
They sure do. That's the energetic exchange that's really happening
here.
And we've seen that in some real simple experiments that we've done. Your question is about hearts communicating with hearts, but let me share a little bit about an experiment we did many years ago where we could see that when people touched, that the brain waves of one person were registering the heart rhythms of the other person. You could see the heart rhythms in that person's brain when they touched. So the heart was communicating with the brain, and it was going back and forth. And as people stopped touching and moved away from each other, the effect was still there. It persisted. They got further away. It got weaker, but you could still see the heartbeat of one person in the brain waves of another. So there's also the heart-to-heart communication happening as well.
That is truly remarkable. In all the years you've been doing this, what are some of the interesting discoveries you've made?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones is the fact that, you know, the Earth produces energetic fields. Now, we didn't discover that. I didn't discover that. It's well known. But what was interesting about that is that we began to see that those fields were actually impacting human health and behavior. And we began to see the possibility, the hypothesis is that we are actually influencing the Earth's fields as well, that all that energy being produced by the 7-plus billion people's hearts can have a measurable impact on the Earth's fields. And so that's a cool thing to think about, and we begin to see evidence of that all along the way, really compelling evidence that that's true. That's exciting to me in all these years of doing things. But to be honest about it, what really excites me the most is seeing the changes that people can make when they learn to utilize what they have inside, the power and intelligence of the heart, and to see them shift and make changes and overcome obstacles and begin to do things that that they never thought they could do, to achieve things that they thought were beyond themselves. That is so exciting to me, more exciting in ways than the research is, because it's people. It's people doing something and empowering themselves. And when I see that, it gives me so much hope about the future, about the beautiful and powerful resilience of the human spirit. And that's the most exciting part of being a part of HeartMath.
How many people, Howard, those not listening to this show, but how many people understand that the heart is much more than what science and medical professionals tell us?
I don't know the exact number. I just know that it's grown so much over these years. And like I said, it's difficult at this point after doing this 30 years and to track how many people's lives have been touched by HeartMath. It's got to be in the millions now.
Jeez.
There's more than that, I'm sure, that have resonated with what we do. People all the time tell me, I read about HeartMath in somebody else's book, for example. Like, well, most of the major authors in the personal growth and transformational space reference our work. So it multiplies that way as well. The last time we checked, I think there was something like 10,000 sightings of HeartMath research in other research literature. So it's just grown and it's grown and it's grown, and so a lot of touch points happen there. So I think that what we've done is we have given this understanding of heart new credibility.
What do they mean by so-and-so got sick or died from a broken heart?
Well, to me, what that means is that, you know, some of the emotions associated with heart got really strong. And it's not the true deeper heart that really got broken in that context. The deeper heart's really what sort of brings us out of those type of places when we find ourselves there. The broken heart is broken expectations. It's It's broken emotions. It's a feeling that we have, and you do feel sometimes those type of feelings as a tension, and sometimes even a pain in the heart, because it is the emotions that are sort of triggering that nervous system in the heart, and you can actually sometimes feel it physically there. But the broken heart is like when you feel like you've disconnected from something that you need to really have in your life. Disconnection from the heart puts you in a place in life that I don't think is very good or very enjoyable. And when we feel like our heart's been broken, we sometimes just lose that connection with that deeper part of ourselves.
Howard, one of your bestsellers is called Heart Intelligence. It's a book called Heart Intelligence. Tell me about that. The title itself means a lot.
Yeah, well, it's a book that that we decided to write with several of us here at HeartMath. Doc Shorty, the founder, myself, our director of research, Dr. Roland McCready, and Dr. Deborah Rosman, who's the CEO of HeartMath, Inc. And the four of us put that book together. And what we wanted to do is give a comprehensive understanding of HeartMath and some of the newer information that we had about the heart and about our new understandings of heart. So, for example, the chapters I wrote the first chapter, and then which is the introduction to HeartMath and what we do and the whole thing. And then I wrote a chapter on what we call social coherence, about what we're seeing in the world as more people begin to activate more of the qualities of the heart, what's happening in society, about where things are going, where things are growing, where we are seeing more cooperation, where we are seeing more of the type of qualities that we want in society. And then other chapters were written by other people. And so at the end of the day, that book is really a comprehensive guide to unfolding your own heart's intelligence. And that heart's intelligence is, again, what we all sort of need now to navigate a world that is very challenging right now.
Can you make the heart more intelligent, or is it what it is?
No, you can definitely refine it. That's where our tools and techniques come in. You can learn to become much more sensitive to the heart's information. A lot of what the heart is trying to tell us is intuitive. It's not so linear. It's not just logical stuff. It's more of an intuitive intelligence. And you can definitely learn to increase your sensitivity to that type of intuitive intelligence and then use it to make decisions big and small that help give you a direction in life. And you make more efficient choices that lead to more fulfillment in your life. So it's definitely a process. We're all born with it. We all have it. It's there. But we often need to dust it off, bring it to the forefront of how we live, and then refine it from there. I'm still refining mine. You know, all these many years later, this is not a static thing for me. I'm still unfolding new parts of myself that relate to the heart's intelligence.
Sometimes, and we see a lot in movies, somebody's stressed to the max and they keel over and die of a heart attack.
Yeah.
What happens there?
Well, you know, when I've talked to cardiologists during these years, and sometimes I would ask them a question like, why do we have so much heart disease? What's causing all these heart attacks and heart disease? And I often felt that what they were going to say is it's bad diet or it's smoking or it's, you know, lack of exercise. But I was so surprised because in many cases, the first thing that popped out of their mouth was it's the stress. Stress is creating the heart disease. So a lot of times when we're just so stressed, the heart goes through a malfunction. It can be a lot of different things that happen to the physical heart. We have this heart attack and, you know, we keel over. The source of that could be a lot of things that have accumulated over time. It isn't just because we were stressed that day. It's a cumulative effect that goes on. But if we live our lives to where we're experiencing high levels of chronic stress over a long period of time, it takes a toll on our physical body. And one of the major parts of our body that takes the biggest hit is actually the physical heart.
Howard, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more. Plus, as we were talking about earlier, so many people are having this incredible feeling of anxiety. We all know why, but let's talk about how we can solve it. Going to take your calls next hour with Howard Martin and share some of your heart-related stories to us. I'd love to hear them. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Howard Martin, author of a couple books, The Heart Math Solution, Heart Intelligence. His website is heartmath.com. He's been there over 30 years now, Howard, isn't it?
That's true. 1991. Long time now.
And you love every moment of it, don't you?
It's been an adventure beyond, as I said earlier, beyond what I could have ever imagined. You know, a guy like me, We've never thought of being an author of the best of best-selling books, being on a show like yours, and being able to go around the world and speak and all that. So I don't know how to describe it other than very fulfilling, and I still feel like the best is yet to come.
What is your recommendation for people who feel tense, there's anxiety, they feel overwhelmed, they're uneasy, all because of things that have been happening over the last couple of years?
Well, my first recommendation is if you're feeling that way, if anyone listening right now can identify with what you just said, George, is first of all, don't feel bad about it.
But they're not alone.
They're not alone at all. It's happening all over the world. People are feeling this way. You're not alone, and it's natural to feel that way when you look at all the things that are taking place in the world. The second thing I would recommend is that look to your heart to find the self-security that you need. Your heart is like your own best friend, really. You know, it's not just this weak place inside yourself. It's not mushy emotions, and it's really something that gives you that solid feeling inside yourself, a feeling of self-security that you can overcome and find ways to manage some of the stress and the anxiety that you're feeling. Also, I would suggest that a couple things. One would be try not to watch so much news. Try not to really get into all the drama and the stories that go on about everything. There's so much information out there now. We all know about fake news. We all know that there's just an overload of different opinions and perspectives and just too much of that. And it can become, you know, almost an addiction to stay in touch with the news in that way. One of the ways that I approach it personally is I definitely keep up with the news, but I don't necessarily read all the stories. I may look at the headlines.
That's right.
But I don't get involved in the story as much. I don't dig into it and try to really identify with it.
See, in the old days when you'd watch Walter Cronkite, you'd get a fair, balanced report, and then you decide what you want to decide. You don't get that anymore. Now it's all biased. There's one side or another, but, I mean, there's no balance.
I agree with that. You know, part of what has been taking place in society is we've become very polarized. And there's a lot of biases and a lot of judgment. And that is one of the biggest actual problems that we have that's contributing to so much of the other problems that are showing up is the bias and the judgment and the separation that we have. And a lot of that, in fact, is driven by the news. Depending upon what news feeds you choose to look at, you're going to get different perspectives. And I can understand why people feel certain ways and maybe feel different than I do or have a different perspective on things than say I would have. They're getting bombarded constantly with information to support that. And after a while, it begins to kind of program us into, you know, these different sort of corners that we stand in. You know, this is my corner and your corner is over there, and this separation comes up. I'll use this term. I may use it again in our show, but I think that one of the keys right now for us to overcome our own personal challenges, like the stress and the anxiety, and for society to begin to overcome some of the challenges that it's facing and all this polarization and anger and hate that goes on, is we have to learn to get along better.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, again, using the phrase of the old days, at least when you argued with somebody about views, they didn't throw a punch at you. I mean, now it's anger.
It's definitely, it can be that way. Very volatile emotions right now. You know, as we go through this shift in consciousness, it's really what this is really all about, where we're actually evolving and growing very quickly. And the field of consciousness that we draw from to create what we call reality is actually changing. And it's speeding up everything on the inside. It's speeding up the vibratory rate, I'll call it that, of our mind and our emotions. So there's an emotional sensitivity, very volatile sensitivity that's out there right now. And it doesn't take much to trigger people. They're so stressed. And so a difference of opinion can be a lot more than just a difference of opinion. It can become a confrontation. And that's a sad thing, but it's happening in society. So I think we have to, again, goes back to, if you bring the qualities of the heart to the forefront of which you do, you bring qualities like being a little kinder to people, a little more understanding, certainly less judgmental, more open, more allowing, and that leads to learning to get along better. I was having a conversation with someone earlier this week, actually, and it was about allowing. And what I said was, you know, I try to allow people to have whatever beliefs they want to have. It doesn't mean I have to agree with them. It doesn't mean that I adopt them. It doesn't mean that I support them. But the allowance factor would be to not go into judgment about those folks. Let them believe what they want to believe. Let them have their own belief systems. Allow for that. Allow for the differences. And that opens the door for learning to get along. And I think that we're learning some hard lessons on that right now. A lot of the events that are taking place in the world are pushing us towards having to finally do more of that, to learn to cooperate. If for no other reason, we have to do it to survive. But that's one of the keys. It's a simple statement, but one of the keys to overcoming the challenges we face in the world today is learning to get along better.
Is it easy or difficult to go through these changes to help the heart?
To help the heart?
To help the heart, grow in terms of intelligence and things like that.
Well, it can be easier than people think because it's innate within us. It's something we were born with. It can be hard at times because the heart's opinion may not necessarily satisfy our personality. It may challenge us to believe something differently. It may challenge us to grow or to make changes that we have put off for a long time. And that's where it can feel like it's hard. It actually becomes easier when you do go ahead and let go and trust in the heart's guidance, and then becomes easier. But along the way, it can feel difficult because, we don't necessarily like change. We get stuck in certain places, and we don't want to move from there. And we all go through that. I certainly go through that in my own personal growth.
Sure.
And that's where it feels hard at times. But it's easier than people think because, again, it's something that's there, something that's there to help you. If you'll trust it, tune into it more, then the process does get easier over time.
We're with Howard Martin. His organization is called Heart Math. Howard, you've talked about intuition. How important is that?
Extremely important. Intuition is a high-speed intelligence that bypasses some of the logical linear processes that we often go through to reach an understanding. It's more of a direct knowingness. It usually shows up more as a feeling we have than as thoughts. The thoughts will come later, but it begins with a feeling that we should be doing something or not doing something, that we should be going in one direction or another direction, that we should be having that conversation now with a person or we should not have that conversation now with a person. It's always these subtle promptings that are happening. Now, there's a quote that I'll paraphrase. I won't get it exactly right, but it's a quote from Albert Einstein when he said, "We can't solve the problems we have today at the same level of thinking we were at when we created them." So in other words, we can't just solve the problems we have in our personal lives or in the world today trying to just think our way through it with the same old logical linear programs. We have to access a different type of intelligence. That intelligence is intuitive. It's a field of information that has within it new understandings and new perspectives and new angles of view that can give us the solutions that we need to the challenges. And it is intuitive in nature. It's not logical in nature. I'm not down on logic. We need to use that as well. But we need to include the heart's intuitive guidance in the process in order to find solutions to the challenges we face. So intuition is unbelievably important right now. And what's cool about it, George, is that it's more available than ever before. It's not just something mystical. It's in the air, and we just need to tune into it. But it's not some mystical experience when I speak to intuition. It's more of an inner prompting that's giving us the type of guidance, like our own inner GPS system, to help us navigate life.
Tell me about these magnetic sensor sites all around the planet. What are they for?
Well, what they're for, and what you're talking about, is part of our nonprofit initiative. It's called the Global Coherence Initiative. And what the researchers at our nonprofit have done is develop very sensitive measuring devices that can measure changes taking place in the Earth's energetic fields. There are two primary fields that the Earth produces. One is called the geomagnetic field. The other is called the ionosphere. And these are like energetic fields that surround the entire Earth. They are protectors. They protect us from incoming space weather, like solar flares, cosmic rays and solar winds, generically called space weather. So they're protecting us from the effects that could have on the planet, which would be devastating. Now, The sensor sites are measuring changes in these fields, and we have them placed in various locations around the world. We built a network of them, and they're inputting data back to our research labs here in Northern California, where we are located. And we have scientists that are studying the changes that are taking place in the fields. They're doing it for three reasons. One is they're contributing to the academic literature to understand these fields better. Secondly, they are adding to a lot of compelling research that shows that these fields are impacting us, that they are impacting how we behave individually and collectively. Human health and behavior is directly tied to the Earth's fields. And the third reason is we are testing a hypothesis. We believe that mass human emotion, whether positive or negative, can have a measurable impact on the Earth's energetic fields. And that would be a revolutionary, actually, discovery. So these sensor sites are put up for those three reasons, and we're studying the fields. We're studying the fields and our relationship to them and potentially our impact upon those fields.
Would you call these intention experiments as well?
They can be. You know, we certainly, there are a lot of things like, you know, intention meditations and things that happen, and there's some measurement that people often look for. We don't measure at that level or that way necessarily, but as the technology continues to refine itself, it's possible that we will. But our intentions are important right now. That's why we have a lot of these things. I mean, tonight is full moon, for example. A lot of groups around the world using full moon energy to affect positive change. Tomorrow is International Day of Peace.
It's today now.
Because we're past midnight.
That's right.
Today is International Day of Peace, which is a day that was created by the United Nations some years ago to where the focus or the intention is actually on creating more peace in the world. So there's millions of people around the world that are aware of this and in some way will be contributing to that intention. My belief is that it really helps, that it all counts. So intention is very important, and when you have intention guided by the heart, it just increases the power of that intention so that it can have more potential effect on whatever it is you're trying to create.
If a pregnant mother is loving and a kind person and everything else, will that flow to the heart system of the baby in the womb?
Yes, it definitely does. There's definitely a lot to be said about the development of that child in the womb in relation to the mother's emotional state. So that love that that mother's feeling for that baby, even before it's born, is actually communicating. And you can see that often reflected in looking at the heart rhythms of the baby. It's what's called heart rate variability analysis. You can see the changes occurring in the heart rate variability when the mother's in the loving state. So it can't be emphasized enough the importance of how mothers are living their life in preparation for the birth of a child. The development of that child is being influenced already before the child is actually in the world.
What do you see, Howard, as the single most important thing for emotional heart health?
More compassion and more care.
Toward our fellow human beings?
Yeah, showing more compassion and more care for others is the best thing you can do for your own physical heart and for your own emotional health. It's putting out more care and more compassion for people. It's so regenerative. It's one of the most regenerative things we do. It regenerates us in a lot of different levels, including hormonally. When we're in a state like compassion for someone rather than judgment, or showing a little bit more care rather than, you know, just sort of cutting people off, it puts hormones into our system that are regenerative to us. More DHEA, for example, which is an anti-aging hormone, or more oxytocin, which is a regenerative hormone directly linked to heart-based emotions. And that gives us greater health. It actually can help to slow the aging process. It certainly brings about balance in our nervous system. A lot of things happen when we're feeling more care and compassion. So the single most thing that I would suggest would be exactly that. It's just those type of feelings. And it doesn't have to, again, be something that you feel gushing out of you. It can be just an attitude that you hold. How you're walking in the world. Are you being more understanding and compassionate to someone else?
I have found, you know, sometimes when you're at a stoplight and you look to your right or left, and there's a homeless person standing there with a little sign, and they stare right at you. And it just breaks my heart. And I always have to give them something. Not a lot, but I have to give them something. But the strange part about this, Howard, is almost every time, and you give from the heart. There's no reason I'm doing this other than I want to help somebody. But every time I seem to do it, I'll get in the mail a check for $500 as a refund from something. Or, you know, it's incredible how that happens.
Well, I think you do it because of who you are. And I know every time we do a show together, there's usually a point in the show, like right now, where I realize, you know, one of the reasons that I appreciate being on your show is because of you, right? I'm not here to grand, you know, to make you sound great, grandize the host.
Oh, go ahead.
You don't need that. Everybody loves you anyway. But there's a certain way in which you approach life that I do appreciate very much. And every time we do a show, it usually pops out somewhere, and I go, this is why I like being with George on his radio show.
It's a fun experience. I have a great time. I mean, Lisa told me you were on tonight, and I went, this is exciting. And we have a great time. Howard, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you. Questions for Howard Martin. Share stories with us. Tell us about your heart situation emotionally, intelligently. And I don't want to know about your blocked arteries, but if you want to share that, that's okay too.